Yeah, right on.
Welcome to Course in Miracles.
I like you said that. What are you wearing? It's called Take Me Home.
Welcome to Course in Miracles. Welcome to a course in mind changing. Welcome to a course, instead of flipping out, flipping in.
Thank you.
Yes. So, there's some little bug, I guess you might say, in the ego's plan for happiness that has a resistance to an answer, resistance to change, resistance to breaking a habit. It's just written right into the ego. But somehow I'm really comfortable with the way I'm doing it. Even when you become aware, there is a better way. It's more healthy. It's more friendly. It's more respectable. It's proper. Your mother would love it if you only would. Do it. And yet, not right now. Maybe later. Maybe there's a better time. What's the hurry? And 5 years pass. What is that? It's time for us to look at that. Look into you. Let's just bust the ego on this funny resistance we have. And I think you can predict that you have will have this again, despite your good intentions. There will be a time to make that investment. There will be a time to say, well, how about change your password? Everybody up to date? Change your password regularly so you don't get hacked, everybody? You're all good. Did you change the oil in your car, right? You know you need to do that on a regular basis, right? It's a good idea. When was the last time you did a really good workout?
This morning.
And how much sugar have you been using? Poisoning your body with sugar a bit much extra? Don't you just do that some other time? I mean, how many other ways is it things that we know we would be happier if only we did these things? And of course, in this book, we're talking about listening to the Holy Spirit instead of the ego. We're learning how to do that. We've been told already 100 ways. If you've been spending time with this book, you've been given examples handed to you on an hourly basis. Invitations to change to what brings peace instead of fear. And yet, naturally, in the ego's domain, there is resistance to taking that healing. I think I'll just stay sick for another day. Thank you very much. Somehow. I just want to bust the ego now. For the next few minutes, let's just get in touch with that resistance to changing your oil on schedule, to changing your password, to actually choosing to be peaceful, or perhaps just dropping that whole line of thought about worthlessness that might have popped up, or doubt, or drop that whole pursuit of somebody else's guilt blocking your freedom. You know you'll be happier if you do. Carrying the such burdens are heavy. You know this, and yet it feels kind of good to remind yourself on how unfairly treated you are. Somehow it feels good to remind yourself how much better you are than somebody else who just doesn't do it right and should. Remind yourself how you're the good guy. Or is it the other way for you? Do you remind yourself that you're actually the bad guy? Do you remind yourself a little too often that maybe you're your own way and there's no hope? Because at least if it was outside, you could maybe complain about it, but now it's you and you're stuck? If you just drop that thought for a few minutes, wouldn't you be better off? Not blaming yourself for being a sack of beep. In any of these thoughts that contract you, they weigh on you only as much as you think about them. And yet it's got a little juice to hang on to these things. Get in touch with that in the next couple of minutes, will you? We're going to bust it. What is that feeling that seems to be content with not healing a situation? What is that comfort in complacency when a better thought option is known? Do you have this in your life somewhere? You know you should. You know you could. And yet there's some comfort so you don't. I don't want to go to the gym and work out on a regular basis. I don't want to do my taxes. You're going to do your taxes. No, not today. No, I just can't face it. I don't want to tell them how I really feel. I know it'll be better after I do. I just can't face it right now. I'm too comfortable not doing it. I can wait another week. I don't want to ask for the raise. I just don't want to. I think I'll get it if I do. What is that? What is that resistance to taking the healing? It's very, very personal. It's very, very common. It's very, very ego. Can you get in touch with that resistance? Try. And then if you care to, can you explain to us? Give us just a word or a phrase, maybe, probably a description would be necessary. Your little justification of why you don't pursue the improvements. Why don't you pursue the improvements? Some of them that come into your life. Can you feel it? Do you know? Bust the ego on this one. Bust the ego wide open. I resist choosing better because... How do you do that? So we resist doing things that we know would be better. Procrastinate, deny. What's your excuse, David? What comes up? You have any common excuse that comes up?
I'll do it tomorrow.
Maybe later.
I'll do it tomorrow. Or, I'm tired. Or You know, getting lazy. Some excuse. Oh, I got to go take care of this or that or forgot.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Oh, I forgot all about that.
It just wasn't urgent.
Yeah.
You know what? It's just not needed.
Really?
Today, right now. So I'll do it tomorrow. Good.
Yeah.
Stephen, any common excuses?
I don't really know what's going on. I got a whole bunch of... They don't make any sense because the first thing I have to do is make myself insensible. You know, I can do those things that I can't do sensibly, so...
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I could make up stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly I think I'm trying to avoid responsibility for my own life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the part of it, the thing is, I know I'm responsible and I have the tools,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's, I can't really.
Yes.
I can't undermine the truth of I'm responsible for me.
Oh, this is good. This is good. Yeah, this is not me. There's some things I could do to make my life better and happier and more secure or whatever it is, things I really want, but it's not me to do that.
Well, once I have some sugar and nicotine or whatever else I can find, then I put a block in between myself and the awareness of...
Yeah.
You know, I just think about it for a while. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Do you have any common excuses of why you don't do things that you know you would?
Can I just go through what I thought about when we were?
All right.
My first thought was that I'm denying that I'm a child or an extension of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I deny that because if I thought, and the second part of that was, I can deny that because I'm not worth being a child of God.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third part, then it keeps on going to, and the reason that I can say that's true, that this is where the ego part is really strong, is back to what he said about responsibility. If I don't have to be responsible for myself as a child of God, then I don't have to do things for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do it, so I'm not. That's a very good excuse. Stephen, any common excuses?
Well, you freaked me out in the first place, I gotta say.
Huh.
Because I was wondering how you got in my head.
Oh.
Because everything you were saying is exactly what I've been intently confronting over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I've been seeing an Ayurvedic practitioner. I've been getting acupuncture treatments for addiction protocols, and it's around food and sweets in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, there's this whole cycle of early in the evening, I've made up my mind, I'm fine, I'll have a glass of water, I don't need to bake a couple of cookies, it's all good, and at 9 o'clock I notice there's cookies in the oven.
Mm.
It's like, I don't even know, it's almost like it wasn't me that walked in the kitchen and did it.
Mm. Nice.
But the underlying thing is along the lines of what you said, there's something about not being worth it, or not mattering.
Mm.
And I'm not sure, I'm sure my ego voice often occurs like my dad's voice.
Mm.
Like I internalize the things that he would say to me in an effort to get good enough for him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something along those lines. And fundamentally, I think, like, the ego really loves having the goods on us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's like the ego gets to be right about making us wrong.
Yes.
And given that's a voice we have listened to probably since we were 4 or 5,
mm-hmm.
it's not a stretch to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
the old ways will die hard.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then moments of like, there's no escape. There's no way out of this. You know, like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
My Ayurvedic person says, you know, well, you need to just do 30 days. Go cold turkey 30 days. I'm thinking, are you crazy? I can't get through the evening.
Uh-huh.
But it's really occurring like struggle, and there is a very loud ego voice in the mix.
Uh-huh. Yes, good.
And it does have to do with being worthy or good enough.
Yes.
You know, just you know, reinforcing all of the illusion.
Is this a worthwhile investment? Would this crazy scheme of 30 days cold turkey be worthwhile after 30 days, after 3 days, after 14 days, somewhere in the middle? Is it just going to all go blank and worthless? And at least you... What? Yeah. Good math.
So there's something sick and twisted about winning because I've lost.
Yes.
Wait, what?
He's becoming good. He has to say... I can't even win at losing. Remember that old phrase?
Yeah.
When I was in high school, you knew it was that thing, well, I can't even be the worst loser. But at least I'm really bad. I'm close. I'm close to losing so much that it's hopeless, and I don't have to even try to win.
Yes, there you go.
It's hope. Easy now. You can't. Forget trying. You can't. Somehow that's a win. Very good. How sick and twisted is that? Good. Good. And yet, it makes perfect sense once you touch it. As darkness gets darker, the deeper you go in the hole. And lightness gets lighter, the deeper you go toward the light. The more close you get, the brighter it gets. Freaks you when you're surrounded by either one, which is where you go, you get surrounded by it.
Oh,
I see. Huh?
Nothing.
It's Mario, you got a job. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
The first one you said was just a little bug. Yeah.
We got a jumper.
We got a jumper.
Spider?
No, it's a cricket.
You're not very good at this.
Oh, yeah, he's way ahead of the rest of us here. Unless it jumps right into crit.
He's still breathing. I'll just throw him outside.
Yeah, he'd be very happy there for the rest of the meeting if you want. No problem. He can calm down. Yeah. Very good. Yes. Like any addiction, the majority of the work is admitting I have a problem and I want to change. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how, but I really would like to change. This is huge. The fighting of that is going to be, I can't change. I'm not worth it. I don't have the tools. Somebody else could, I can't. There's somebody else is further and closer there where they can do it and I can't. It's very, very common. The ego will just drown you in hopelessness.
Well, I have a good story. It's like I don't drink. I don't do drugs.
Okay.
I mean, I could have addictions that are really, really harmful.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I just like cookies and ice cold milk.
Yeah. Food.
And you can bake.
Yeah. Right out there.
Yeah. Great for your dating profile.
That's a good thing.
That is.
And yet, there's probably some incessant thinking that goes on around cookies and sugar, as you described earlier, that you'd rather not be there, knocking and nagging. And then eventually a doctor will tell you, you've got to change this number right here.
Mm-hmm. Been there.
Yeah.
That's what started this.
Good, good. The awareness challenges up. Bring it on, sometimes we say. One year, you know. Know that you can actually conquer it. Before you know you can conquer it, don't bring it on anymore. Don't let this number go up. Yes, there's some excuse going on there when you actually know what needs to happen really well. You've rehearsed it 1,000 times in your head. Well, you have any common excuses of why you shouldn't or won't do some improvement?
Yeah, not wanting to admit that I was wrong.
Ooh.
Or the other person was wrong.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I have to defend myself that way.
Yeah. Because if you admit it, this is a comment on you. For however many days, weeks, years you've been thinking this way. You were wrong.
They were right and I was wrong.
Wow. That's good. Yeah. It's just,
I can't allow that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Your image might change a little bit. Might change. The picture you have of you might change a little bit.
Well, I just have to admit that I was wrong.
Yeah, but then you were wrong. All the time you thought you were right, you'd have to go back to the beginning of the episode of the event. Wrong the whole time. Been not loving yourself, maybe in this case, in some kind of denial, a jerk, all these flavors of what wrong actually you have to admit looks like, insensitive, unintelligent,
lazy,
yeah, a fool in some way, greedy. Angry or foolish, as the Buddha say. One of these flavors is your poison. Don't do it. Don't do any of them. Oh, that's good. Thank you. Masako, you have any reasons why you'd put off till some other time?
Yeah, let me pick one of many. well, the first thing that comes to my mind is my relationship with people more than like bad habits. So there is a seeming that I know because I'm enlightened that all people need love and wants people to show appreciation and acknowledge them. So what I do is, so the seeming is, well, I know they want that from me and I'm not going to give it to them. So I have the power
right,
to give this thing away that they desperately want and need from me.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah.
There's no ego there at all.
Like I said, I mean,
it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. The greed with having power. How would you ever let that advantage go? Oh. Yep, that's busting the ego to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe when the time is just right, you can get something really good in return.
That's right.
Maybe will.
I wait for the opportunity for some sign that they're redeeming himself in front of me.
Yes.
I mean, it's so insane.
Yes, yes. When he humbles himself enough, then your enlightened self will be generous at that point. Good busting, Masako. Good busting. Carol, do you have any common excuses of why you won't do the right thing?
Well, I'm just trying. I couldn't hear the whole setup you were saying.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of trying to gather what the assignment is. I have something I just seriously procrastinate about.
Yeah.
And I know that it's only damaging me.
Yeah.
But I still do it.
That's what we're talking about.
Even though I know, as a matter of fact, it's part of my morning thing of blessing other people and blessing myself first. And trying to acknowledge that I need to do that before I go ahead and bless other people. And then I even acknowledge that right then, but I still don't do it.
Yeah. That's it.
And
yeah.
I really don't know. I mean,
So you're automatically at a disadvantage. You're at a disadvantage from the start for not having put yourself first.
Yeah.
So you could afford to bless others.
Yeah.
You can afford to be at peace. And yet, there's some, what is it, false humility? Some self-worth, maybe? It says if long as you don't put yourself first, you look good to God or some authority?
I don't know, but it's pretty crazy.
Too selfish, maybe? For you to be first? For you to be happy is too selfish? Maybe somebody else should be happier first? That makes you better?
I personally don't think it matters one iota the order of things.
Huh.
It's the importance you put on the order of things that's important. And that's only your interpretation of how this is supposed to occur.
No,
I don't think God cares if you bless yourself first or bless everybody else. I think blessing everybody else might make you feel better about blessing yourself.
Well, what I meant is being a blessing. Maybe I didn't say it right. Being a blessing to myself. That's what I do. Or being a blessing to whoever I encounter during the day or think of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's part of my this thing I do every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I start with myself and then don't pay attention to it. So anyway, it's crazy making.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Good.
Stupid.
Good. Good busting. Good busting, Carol. Mario.
You know, there's no coincidence of why I'm here today and when I first walked through that door 5 years ago. More or less. And just sharing with these guys here about my silent night. You know, and as we were talking, that the words of that song kept on just turning over in my head. I go, wait a minute, there was a coincidence for that night. The silence was so loud. But the thing is that it's tied into tonight. Because the thing is, I've been learning about this ego thing I have and this thing that's always going to be there if I let it be there.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I've learned that I'm the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to invest more into this bank that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I know my ego knows the combination, but as long as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I'm in charge.
Yeah.
I'm in charge, and for now it's just... And just being in charge unwrapping, being in the present, hollow, with bows and strings, everything.
Do you have some common excuse why you don't do it today, which you know needs to be done to make a better tomorrow? Put it off yet again? What's going on in your head when that happens?
You know,
somehow it's okay that you don't.
I think sometimes now that I'm focusing more on me now that I'm the investment in my bank.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's just I know there's that piece of that mind that talks to you.
Yeah.
That just kind of like, uh-huh, sure, uh-huh, you can't do it. Yeah. And then now I'm saying, watch you.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, it's just...
Yeah. No, that's a very common one. You can't do it, so why even try? So it sneaks up very, very often. Kim, do you have something common?
Well, if I had to say just a word, I would say control.
Mm.
Because no one can do anything with my life better than I can, even God.
Mm.
But I've been thinking about this week. I don't know if it's something I read or what, but we're so addicted to this and what goes on inside of us that we cannot... See, we recognize our feelings and our thoughts because we create them.
Mm.
But God does not recognize our feelings and our thoughts. Mm. And so there's this whole heaven around us and in us that we don't recognize because it's not our feelings and our thoughts. And so we don't trust because it's not something that we recognize. We don't trust it as much as we do our own self.
Yes.
Our small self.
Yes.
And so the challenge is to ignore what we feel here because, I mean, it kind of goes back to good and bad. We think, well, we should be good. If we do good, we're going to feel good. If we do bad, we're going to feel bad. In this world, none of that, maybe it makes sense in this world, mm-hmm. but in God's world, there is no good or bad. Mm-hmm. So in heaven, the feeling, we won't have the same feeling. So I can't expect that I do something good or I say the right thing or I make the right move. I mean, I can do it in this time and space. I can try to make my best choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to feel
right.
what I would feel if I was in heaven because those are not feelings.
It's too different, I heard her say.
Very different.
I heard her say the reason she doesn't necessarily do what she knows is better for her is that would be too different.
Yeah, so but I can, knowing that concept,
mm-hmm.
I can put my trust in that,
mm-hmm.
that there is a better way,
uh-huh.
and that I can trust, and I'm not necessarily going to feel that I did something right,
uh-huh.
but that I can trust and then just do the next step right in front of me.
Wow.
And
so you
watch my life unfold.
You'd be willing to let go of all the patterns of knowing what's right.
Right.
All the patterns of feedback saying it's good.
Right.
You'd be willing to do all that in order to cross the bridge and actually be in truth?
I am.
Is truth that important to you?
Very. It is to me.
Chapter 21, it challenges directly to what she's pointing to. Are you willing to let go of your false ideas?
Okay.
Because they're false. Not knowing what follows. Are you willing to pursue the truth just for itself? Not knowing how it's going to feel,
mm-hmm.
look like, what it's going to do to your friends, your family, your who knows what.
And
very
so then
good.
You have to put one foot in front of the other and just trust that you're doing the right thing, even though it doesn't feel like you think it's supposed to feel.
Yes. Very good.
And then know that you're still on this path that you want to be on of seeking God's love.
that sounds like kind of a dicey bridge to cross. What could possibly push you to take these little steps out to the unknown? Does it even guarantee you're going to smile?
No.
I mean, probably happier.
This word reprograms popped in my head.
Yeah.
Is it what we're seeking?
Yeah, absolutely. The old program's bad. The old program actually causes problems and chaos and doubt and fear, makes other people around us angry. Even the ones we say we love, we end up saying exactly the wrong thing, exactly the right time, and you wish you didn't say it. That's a broken program. So yes, this book reprograms that twisted behavior, that the same behavior Carol's talking about, that seems to be supported because it keeps happening. Yeah. Yeah. Sharon, do you have some common excuse not to do what you know is right?
Yeah. So, I was thinking that everyone was saying, it's like, okay, so I'm not lazy.
Okay.
But I deserve to sit down.
Mm.
But I'm not lazy.
Mm.
And I want to say that I won't do X, Y, and Z because I'm comfortable. But then when I don't do it, it doesn't make me comfortable because it's constantly nagging in my head.
Like that.
So, I don't... So that's a disconnect right there, so I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I write lists, and I enjoy so much checking them off, so I don't understand why I'm not doing it. I mean, there's the big three, which I won't go into, the big three which I'm not doing.
Sure, sure.
And I know the reasons why I should do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I'm not
doing it. And in my experience, I do the same thing, lists, everything, I love checking them off, very productive, right? But there's plenty I do not do.
Yeah.
And boy, sometimes I just choose to, for some reason, do them. These things.
Yeah, and it feels fantastic.
Boom! It only took 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
So
you've waited years, and finally you just said, you know, I'm just going to do this now. Boom.
And so yeah, I don't know what the resistance is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we're looking at here. We're busting the ego. The ego's still got its passwords to the bank. Or the account numbers, or Mario said. The ego somehow has the ability to stop us from doing certain things. The ego in its programming, it's because I don't do them.
He's robbing us.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not interesting, but I don't know what the... I don't get it.
Well, thank you for joining us. Plenty of us don't get it. We actually need some help of something that had a perspective higher. And that's what this invitation is with this book. So much authority in this book to walk you through seemingly very mundane exercises in the workbook. Why am I looking at the pencil? Why am I looking at the button? And it's because we're going to go deprogram at the essential level on which we operate. Not big highfalutin spiritual prayer that would bring in some tenth heaven level blessing that would just suddenly make us better. That's not what Course in Miracles says. No, Course in Miracles comes right down here in the dirt where we live every day, in our fears, in our misconceptions about what our happiness even is. And that's what the workbook does. Pam, do you have any common excuses where you just kind of get away with it and not do it?
I heard something a long time ago, and I often think of it, and I can really relate to what you were saying. And someone once said that when you say, oh, screw it, I'm just going to make the cookies, or I'm not going to go and clean the yard today, or whatever, that there's a little euphoria in the ability to say, ah, screw it.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of that, like, there's a little, a thrill is too strong a word, but it's like that. It's kind of like the lack of control is kind of
relief.
Yeah, there's a little something there. Yeah. It's like, it's more understandable if you're thinking about. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Intoxicating.
Right, yeah. And that's funny you said that because it's apparent if you think of a drink or a cookie, it's like, ooh, this little thrill. But it's not just maybe the the temptation itself, but it's just that little moment where you say, I don't care if it's 1 a.m., I'm making popcorn, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care.
In that moment,
just, yeah.
You taste freedom.
There's a little thrill there. And I feel like, I don't know how to really put it into words, but someone did a long time ago, and that always... And I even will remember that when I'm saying screw it. Of course you regret it. You don't sleep well, whatever. You get up in the next day, like, oh, great. Now someone's stopping by, and I still have my paint cans in the dining room.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I should have cleaned that up, or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little, there's a little wonderful feeling of losing your, choosing to be out of control.
Yeah.
And I found a word for that.
Sorry?
I found a word for that.
What's
that? Just now that we're... There's no coincidence that I'm listening to this. You know, because the thing is, everything's revealing itself on how I act now. Hey, Mario, you have a nice day. Hey, I'm not cheating myself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I'm not cheating.
Yeah, there's a little...
No.
There's a little, like... Anyway, that's what's...
So if you're... Because it's beautiful. You're talking... You ran into intoxication.
I know.
Is it sugar or a drug
or
chips or bit TV, just watch another hour, whatever.
Yeah, or not doing. To me, it's always the not doing. I know it's also the joys of homeownership.
Yeah.
However.
Yeah.
But...
yes.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah, there's always so many things that... And frankly, it's exhausting.
Isn't
when you
it?
Look around and you think, I still have suckers on the redwoods. I still have... things that are, I feel so much, and it's true, you do, just in the last 2 days, I'm like, I'm doing a chore before I walk the dog, because then I feel like running when I walk the dog. It's like, well, I've already got that done. And it's true, when you do sort of, you know, get a little discipline going, and
knock one off.
The more you do, the better you feel. So
yeah.
So
then why don't we do it? That's what I'm
doing. Right?
I don't know. I think it's. I don't know why, but I know that it feels like a lack of self-love. There's a in that moment. There's this little self-respect that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And you're not worth the effort.
When you get outside of that little buzz
for
having the freedom and power to put your hands in your hip and say, screw it, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
When you get anywhere beyond that buzz, you go, oh, no, I wouldn't. Or if you have loved one, if you watch somebody else you truly love do that, you'd say, maybe you want to try a little harder not to take that drug or go ahead and take care of yourself a little more before we go. You know, do it. Go, yeah. You root for them.
I mean, it's my work. I do that all day.
Ah.
Yeah, you do.
I do it all day.
Ah.
And have for years.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Apparently.
And then... And it's like I can give everybody else gas.
Uh-huh.
But...
Yeah.
You know?
A self-love thing.
Yeah. I think really what it bubbles down to is self-love. Because, I mean, I see other people that... I mean, they, you know, you talk about astrology and they say, oh, Aries, they're really in touch with their own needs, whatever. I don't know if that's true or not, but I just, there are certain people that know how to look after themselves.
Oh, yes.
And they, I mean, it's like, many, many times in my life I've thought, man, I would never put myself first like that. Mm. And I admire it.
Yes.
You know.
You could use a little borrow it here and there.
Yeah. It's like, damn. You know.
Yes.
And somewhere, I don't know if it's like, you know, how many times you were dropped on your head or someone forgot to pick you up when you were crying? I don't know. I don't know. Where does it come from? You know, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because we're here now and there's this. And so, you know, I mean, like, well, as we were talking, I always think, well, what does this say? And I flipped it to lesson 166. He gives without exception, holding nothing back that can contribute to your happiness. And yet, unless your will is one with his...
Yes.
And that is self-love, like you said too. His gifts are not received.
Yes.
So really, if that's, you know, in that moment, is our will one with God's? Mm-hmm. When we're not willing to do the work of that's we know we're going to make us feel more.
Is our will even one with us?
Yeah.
Homeowner.
Yeah. So exactly.
Us body owner.
Yeah.
Us.
Yeah.
Seeker of happiness and freedom. You just want to be happy. You just want to be healthy. You just want to be have it in your heart to love if somebody should say, hey, I need a hug. You just want to be available, right? Are we even aligned with ourselves in a moment like that, the phrase
you
that have I
have. You have a hug for everybody in the room.
You got it, right?
Right.
But what about you?
Yeah, so negative freedom is my term for that.
Oh, yeah.
It's freedom. I'm telling you, it feels like freedom. It looks like freedom, but it's negative freedom.
Okay, so I know that because I feel guilty. Because I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
Why do I keep doing it?
Exactly.
Why you stupid.
Keep, yeah.
I'm wondering why we keep feeling guilty. I think judgment is where we get in trouble.
Uh-huh.
If, I don't think God judges us, so we're doing something that...
Oh, I'm the queen of judge.
I know, but so, let's say you didn't do something you wanted to do, but you said, okay, that's all right, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like that might be the cornerstone of peace, is to say, whatever I'm doing.
But
I'm
sometimes, I agree with you sometimes, but then sometimes it's that spiritual bypass thing, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh,
I'm you perfect know? Just the way I am.
You can, yeah.
Me and my ego yeah. living in a body and condemning my neighbor is perfect just the way I am.
This is what God wishes for me. It could be a spiritual bypass.
It could not be, but it could
I just want to say something. I just want to say something about addiction, because we're all talking about various forms of addiction, whether it's cookies or alcohol or drugs
or laziness.
TV or lazy or
the past.
Whatever. We're all addicted to something, and often many things. And I think the hard part about that is it blocks our true identity, because we think we're going to die if we try to conquer these addictions. Mm. If we try to let go of the cookies, it feels like we're going to die.
Yes.
I mean, I've let go of alcohol. It felt like I was going to die. I've had to kick... pain meds after, pain, a lot of pain, and I felt like I was going to die.
Yes.
And you just have to walk around and breathe and trust and breathe and trust and breathe and trust.
Yes.
And that's the only way. And then when you get past, and this is just physical addiction, when you can get past it, then the love starts to happen and the self-esteem and self-worth kicks in, and you start to feel
good. Because the self-empowerment shows up when you actually walk over
and the courage kicks in, because you know in future there's going to be other things that are going to come up, and you're going to die, and you're going to get through it.
Yes.
I have two things to say. One is it's like, to go back and hear your will being one with His. And if our will is one with His, then yes, there's no death. There's no death. This isn't real, so... the fear of ultimately the body being in danger. It's like, it's such a false but loaded motivator to have whatever, and you don't want to get off the couch, you want to have sugar, whatever. The other thing, I totally forgot what I was about to say. I was going to say something.
If it comes back, jump in.
Okay.
Because meanwhile, I want to talk about...
What you share with me, I mean, go back, but what I got from you, and I'm grateful, is that idea of rebellion.
Yeah.
And right now, I'm like, whoa, this is another form to me of rebellion.
Yeah.
And it's been with me my whole life.
Yeah. And so right. sensical, because I want to cut us all some slack, because the reason we all have these battles is because this is a perverted world, and we're all looking to just do a little happy right now.
We
just are doing the best we can, and so there's truth in that.
Yep.
So we all get to cut each other some slack, because everybody's doing the best they can, and sometimes you just need a damn cookie, or at least you feel like you do, or you need to stay on the couch, or whatever. And call in sick, let someone else do it. Sometimes you kind of, so we have to, we can make as much sense as we can, and then also remember that this is all insanity too.
Insanity.
So there's that, not to say we can just, who cares, but I just want to add that little
Good. So that's A Course in Miracles is here to put a sane frame around the insane world. And we have to step out of the insane world for a few moments, like we do at Thursday nights, like you do anytime I read this book. It's just so sane.
Yeah.
It shocks me out of my little ego. Whatever situation I was in, I'm out of. Yeah, I just want to comment. Thank you, Luann. she said that, you know, this guilt thing is just another opportunity to me, which you said, the fact that you're feeling guilty is indeed going down the staircase, chasing your tail into darkness. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole it's a pattern that is to be seen and busted. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. For
it's
sure.
Can I
tell you something about that? Mm-hmm. Years and years ago, my inner critic came up.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, criticizing me, all it does is make me feel bad. It doesn't make me do anything different.
Does it do anything?
So could we do something different than criticizing me? And it said, yes. And it says, and I asked it, do you like to be called the inner critic? And it said, no. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what is your purpose then? And he says, and it wasn't he. Mm-hmm. He says, my purpose is for you to follow your moral ethics belief system. And when you don't do that, then I'm trying to get your attention so that you will.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so if you want me around, then I want to live in a penthouse that's made out of white marble with a huge white desk. Mm-hmm. And when I call you, then you come and we'll talk about whether your belief system is still true.
Mm-hmm.
Or it should be changed, and what you're doing is not following it.
This sounds like the little garden exercise we talked about.
It does.
Penthouse, white marble, white columns, you know where to find me. She says, okay. And she can make that room in her head and be able to go there anytime to hear him speak.
And every time I feel a little bit self-critical, I think, okay, it's time for me to go talk to him.
Excellent. Yeah, that's what I'm exercising. Very good.
So it's a tool which is not bad then.
Huh.
Right?
Huh? Yep.
Okay. It's a reminder to me of how I really want to be.
Actual happy place.
Happy place.
Yep. Place.
Yes. Yes, it's a tool. Yeah.
And it's not guilt.
Well,
because that's what it seemed to start. There's guilt, and if you don't want this guilt, then maybe there's a way to deal with something as opposed to feeling guilty or going there. And that's what I heard from you.
Yeah. Yes.
As opposed to keep running from this, let's have a talk with what's going on.
Yeah, with some sanity.
Isn't that another form of an illusion?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just the ego outsmarting you.
Forgiveness is an illusion. Right?
The last illusion.
Right? It's an illusion that helps you let go of illusions. But since you're letting go of something like fear, which is nothing, it doesn't exist. Fear doesn't actually exist anywhere. You can't really draw a picture of fear. There's no fear. There isn't any fear. This is you thinking about what might happen each time, and you're making something we call fear. But there is no actual fear. Okay? That's to be busted. So that's an illusion. So anything that deals with an illusion is yet another illusion. Nothing from nothing gives you nothing. So yes, absolutely. It's good. So miracles. Miracles. There are no miracles in heaven. Zero. None. Pop. None. There's no need because miracles convert wrong thinking to right thinking. Heaven means you're in a state of right thinking. There is no wrong thinking. So there are no miracles in heaven. There's no forgiveness in heaven.
It doesn't need it.
It doesn't need it.
Oh.
Yes. Right?
You know when
very good.
Arrived,
very good.
So beautiful.
Okay. Thank check you. This out. Turn to page 409 in the text. In the front of the book. 409. We're in a section that is called The Obstacles to Peace. The first obstacle is, you just reading that chair for the first time, Mario?
Yeah,
that is a crack up.
I didn't know which how to take it. I was just like.
Do I like it or did I not like it?
I don't know, but I was just kind of just going, you know, the nail to my seat.
But this
cross,
is a great example.
To my back, someone scratching me.
This is an example of what we're talking about. Somebody went to go fix that chair, and they ran a screw up from the bottom to hold the seat on, but the screw was too long, and it went right through the top. Did they take the screw out and find a shorter one? No, let's do that another day. Instead, they just took a pen and said, circled the screw coming through and said, beware of nail, whatever it is.
Oh, my God.
That's lame.
I don't think it was the same person.
That is our stool.
The same person.
I think it's precious.
I think that is a great example.
Well, even if it isn't the same person, why didn't they take the screw out, whoever it was?
They put the screw up, somebody else sat on it, they got a screw in their ass, and they ripped it out.
They found the pin.
Doesn't it tie into this meeting tonight?
Yeah.
Beware of screw.
You're right. Beware of screwing yourself. And so the owner of that stool knows. But I love that stool. I think it should never be repaired now.
I'm sitting on the right seat.
Okay, page 409, paragraph 7. Check it out. Remember, this is a clever bust your ego section. Yes?
I, for some reason, had this page marked.
Oh.
There's no coincidence.
As I was just gazing, I was reading 7.
Okay. All right, good. Nice. I like it. Right meeting, right time. This is your meeting. That's why we're all here. We all showed up for you, for sure. And we're happy to be here. So, we're in a section that's called the obstacles to peace. And the first obstacle that you interpose in your life against peace is this section. And it is the desire to get rid of it. What?
To get rid of peace.
Get rid of peace! The course is busting your ego because it has a desire to get rid of peace. It must have me all wrong. I want peace more than anything else. You know this already.
I don't. But I mean,
you know this.
If I did, I would. So I don't.
Good. 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 That's busting the ego. See, sometimes peace is very inconvenient.
Yeah.
When it's time to attack somebody, for example. Please, let's have zero peace. I want the rage. I want the red eyes wide open. I want the forehead, the shoulders, the fists. I want all to come together at the right time in a concert of anger.
Call everybody, tell the story over and over.
Yeah, get some support. Get some support from my friends and how right I am. And then when I confront that SOB, it's going to be a storm of correction coming into their life, and I'm going to be so right. I do not want to be peaceful at that moment. It would be very inconvenient to suddenly peace out and give him a hug? No. Get on it. There is a desire to get rid of peace a lot in this world. Okay, so of course, the other side of that is there is another way. There's a better way. We've all felt the idea how, yes, we know in our lives, everybody probably thought of a few things during the meditation that I could and should do, and it would just be better if I did. Actually, it's a pretty high priority I've been ignoring. Yes, indeed. Well, in this case, of Course in Miracles, we're 409 pages in, hearing the authority say, there is a voice not out there, there's a voice in there, there's a voice in you that if you just go silent for just a moment, will encourage you to go in the right direction of right thinking, to join with your brother instead of further divide, always waiting for that chance for you just to go silent. And listen to that still small voice, which will allow you to join and heal. And heal your own life. Always waiting.
I agree. We had a minister once at the church say, you can call it instinct, gut sense, intuition, mysticism. I call it the language of God.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Let's read about it. You ready, David?
Alrighty.
One paragraph. Let's read that first paragraph. We'll take it one at a time. But this is all, these several paragraphs have worked together very nicely.
The little insane wish to get rid of him who you invited in and push him out must produce conflict. As you look upon the world, this little wish, uprooted and floating aimlessly, can land and settle briefly upon anything, but has no purpose now. Before the Holy Spirit entered your abide with you, it seemed to have a mighty purpose, the fixed and unchangeable dedication to sin and its results. Now it is aimless, wandering pointlessly, causing no more than tiny interruptions in love's appeal.
Okay, beautiful. So this little insane wish to get rid of the Holy Spirit, to get rid of right mind, get rid of right-mindedness that would just ask us to simply choose peace. Or join instead of divide. That little wish, what we've been educated on through chapter 17 and 18, inviting the Holy Spirit into your special relationship might mess with the specialness of your relationship.
make it holy, make it join, and make it now a place of joining. That would be so different from the competition, the competitive habits that have built up over the years. Indeed. This little same wish to get rid of the answer, whom you invited, because you said, I would really like to love rather than hate. That's how you invited the Holy Spirit. Show me how. That's how you invited the Holy Spirit. As you look upon the world, okay, invited, and you push him out, must produce conflict, okay? Must produce conflict. As you look upon the world, this little wish to do it your way, uprooted and floating aimlessly, can land and settle briefly upon anything, for it's no purpose now. Now, before the Holy Spirit entered to abide with you, you seem to have a mighty purpose doing it your way. You seem to have a mighty purpose. The fixed and unchangeable dedication to sin and its results. Sin being separation. Sin being continue to go with wrong thinking. Had little results. It had, like we talked about, a little quick little empowerment. You just continue to do it my way. Forget peace, love, sharing. Forget that. And it feels kind of free to say, screw it. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Very good. It kind of had its purpose, right?
Every time I get in trouble.
What?
Except every time I do, I get in trouble.
Right? Good thing. That's why we're here.
One time I was at a stoplight, and I always go straight. And something in me said, turn right. And I said, if I turn right, I have to go to 41st. To get on the freeway, it's going to be a million lights. I always go straight, so I went straight. They were working on the road, and I sat there for 10 minutes waiting for them to let me by.
Just didn't listen. Your old way will do, right? Very good. The fixed and unchangeable dedication to sin and its results. Now it is aimless. Now not listening, hopefully. We get the trust and the authority of A Course in Miracles that it has your best interest. This is actually a message for you personally. This book is a message for you personally. For your peace and happiness. You do have to listen. Try it. It's you trying it. Nothing's going to happen to you. You're going to happen to you in a happy way. That's what we're talking about. So, once you get that clue, which is what we're doing here, and it will deliver. You go through the text in the workbook, and the love in here is so palpable, Kim, right? The love that surrounds the little dark image you had of yourself was so palpable, it lit you up, warmed you up. That's what happens when you do this work, You can't deny it. And then this sentence applies. Now is this little idea to do it your small, selfish, angry way. Your angry way is now, no, that's aimless. It's not worth it. Aimless, wandering, pointlessly, causing no more than a tiny interruptions in love's appeal. That would be as your mind heals, as you stop trying to follow the ego's promises. Yeah, okay, next paragraph. Stefan. Number 8.
This feather of a wish, this tiny illusion, this microscopic remnant of the belief in sin, is all that remains of what seemed to be the world. It is no longer an unrelenting barrier to peace. Its pointless wandering makes its results appear to be more erratic and unpredictable than before. Mm-hmm. Yet what could be more unstable than a tightly organized delusional system? Its seeming stability is its pervasive weakness, which extends to everything. The variability the little remnant induces merely indicates its limited results.
Okay, this is busting the ego in its ideas of hopelessness. Let's unpack this a little bit. Okay, this feather of a wish to actually not do the solution, I'm better off sticking with my old ways. This feather of a wish, this tiny illusion, this microscopic remnant of the belief in sin. Sin is separation. Sin is wrong thinking. Is all that remains of what once seemed to be the world. My only reality was this way of being a victim, this way of being angry, this way of being powerless, this way of being stuck with my ideas of addiction, or whatever it was. The quick anger that came up, the fear that came up, the worthlessness feelings that kept showing up, that used to be the world. But when it dawns on your mind that these feelings and thoughts only occur as you think of them, and can actually not occur, by your own election, and you could live a few moments free of them. When that happens, the gig is up. Now it's a matter of you being vigilant to no longer hold these false thoughts and keep visiting these dark corners and being a victim. You're going to need some miracles to do that, because the world will show up bigger than you sometimes, and you feel like you can't. Don't worry, you can. It's your world. Yeah. Okay. Its pointless wandering makes its results appear to be, I'm going to put, even more erratic and unpredictable than before. What the Course in Miracles is saying here is that once you recognize that these wanderings, say going after the cookies or, you know, leaving the list undone, the most important things, and you keep finding the fourth one is, let's do that first. But it's number one. What about one, two, and three? Okay. These erratic, consistently going away from what you know you want to do or should do, somehow, not doing what you know is bad. Those erratic wanderings now are seen for what they are. And I think the word was crazy? Stupid? And some other harsh words that were in our heads that probably weren't spoken on how we treat ourselves. They're seen for that. Fine. The Course is just pointing that out right here. Yet, what could be more unstable than a tightly organized delusional system? Its seeming stability, because it keeps happening, right? So it must be some truth to it, or I'm a victim, I'm not really strong enough to be better. What? Its seeming stability is its pervasive weakness, which extends to everything. Its seeming stability is a pervasive weakness. You see, it did not say its stability is its weakness. Its seeming stability. In other words, when you look at a weak bridge with rusted bolts, you see how weak it is. It seems stable because it's still standing. But when you see the weaknesses of something and admit it, as strong as it may appear, it now is known as weak. In other words, it's a lie. You see the lie of your behavior, like taking drugs to be happy, to feel better. Well, I will feel better now, but I won't be able to sleep. I'll probably be late to work. I have to skip taking care of my family, my taking a shower, whatever it is you're going to skip so you can do your drug. That seeming good idea, you just go ahead and eat the whole box of cookies. Why not? I can. I bought them. I paid for them. They're going to expire tomorrow. Look at the date. I should eat them now. I have to eat them now. They're starving kids in jail. I have to eat it right now. That seeming stability that you now know is weak thinking. You know it. That now becomes proof of its illusory nature. Illusions look real, but they're not. You have to bust it, see? The benefit of looking at it.
Well, it's cool. I mean, for me, it's a strong desire in my life, in the world, just demand that something lasts forever in this world.
I've done that.
And the little voice over here kind of can tell me certain things, but I don't want to hear that. I'm determined to win. And I'm, no matter what, it's gonna last forever for me, because I can tire of this. So it's really interesting, because it parallels. So I have a desire for something to be eternal.
Yes.
And so
yes.
I can't find it. I'm going to do everything I can to make it. What can I have control over in this world that I will make for as last as forever? Yeah. And it doesn't matter what it is. I'll be damned or not. It doesn't matter. I want something.
Yes.
To last forever.
Yes.
Because I'm tired of everything changing in this world.
Tired of it.
I want to be right all the time.
Yes.
I want to win.
Uh-huh.
And if people keep the rules the same, I'm a winner.
Uh-huh.
So then, wow.
Yeah.
Think of a miracle. There's something that will be eternal, not in your little world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I can try to reenact patterns to fake that I'm in control, to fake it, because control is... that desire. I mean, how many times I wanted to do something that's stupid just because I can? No one's going to stop. But I have control over that.
Yeah. This world is made of inconsistencies.
Right. And if you grow up, most of us grow up, every little
the only fun you can have normally is when it's forbidden, because you're told to be responsible. And so pretty soon the world is a nutty, crazy place, because wow, you mean you really have to do something that's fun? But the only thing that's really okay is what's forbidden. And then pretty soon as adults we grow up, and now we're still parceling out this little bit of rebellion to our... I'll speak for myself.
We're developing our identity in this world, and that identity is based on the foundation of control and rebellion and fuck it, and those are our things that we create, our identity. It's false identity, but...
And it's cultural.
Yeah.
Don't you think, though, that you said, I'm in control of that. I don't think we're in control of much of anything.
We can do
something, but we're not in control of the outcome. And when we do it, we think we're going to be in control of the outcome. And that sometimes you're lucky and it works out the way you want, and sometimes you're not.
Oh, I can pretty consistently screw things up on an ongoing basis for my entire, pretty much my life, until once again the
this is a desire that is the desire to get rid of peace, because if you realize you can screw it up every time, teenagers will try to make things more predictable by go ahead and doing the wrong thing. We have control of that.
Oh gosh, it's funny you brought
that
up. No, I was entertaining my coworkers, and I was telling them a story about my past when I was 16, and I'd had this first girlfriend. I walked to her house, took about a mile, but on the way there was a graveyard. Mm-hmm. And anyway, every time I passed that graveyard, I'd take her a bouquet of flowers. Mm-hmm. And a customer goes, "Hey, that's a one-way ticket to hell." I go, "No. The person that's laying there has no clue that I took them. You're supposed to give flowers to people that are alive, not dead. That's a waste of a flower." So now I was going back and forth with the customer. I go, "Hey, ma'am, I was just talking to my coworkers here. You jumped in, so I'm just giving you my version of why I took them. And plus, I had a good time. You know, whatever."
Wait a minute. You took flowers off a grave to give to a girlfriend.
Because it was a waste of flowers. Okay. You're supposed to give flowers to people when they're alive, not dead.
It's okay.
Okay.
He probably never told her to sleep. I didn't know, so it didn't matter. Right?
Yeah, where did you get those flowers? Now, I'm not saying.
Well, you know.
Okay, paragraph 8.
In the garden. 16.
In the garden.
Paragraph 8, sentence 6, last sentence. Okay. It's seeming, 5 was, its seeming stability is its pervasive weakness, which extends to everything. The variability the little remnant induces merely indicates its limited results. Seeming success, seeming power, wrong thinking just costs.
So it's just the whole paragraph is illusion.
Yes, we are living and dealing in illusion, and it's just not necessary. Exactly right. Okay, next paragraph, please. Luann?
How mighty can a little feather be before the great wings of truth? Can it oppose an eagle flight or hinder the advance of summer? Can it interfere with the effects of summer sun upon a garden covered by the snow? See but how easily this little wisp is lifted up and carried away, never to return, and part with it in gladness, not regret. For it is nothing in itself, and stood for nothing when you had greater faith in its protection. Would you not rather greet the summer sun than fix your gaze upon a disappearing snowflake and shiver in remembrance of the winter's cold?
Yeah. We are talking about addiction. We're talking about the blind force of addiction that is in place for a pattern that seemed to be a way things work, seemed to be something that brought happiness. But then when you finally get past it, when you finally take the risk that you are not going to die, when you finally do the chore or the thing that you've owed yourself for so long, it was nothing. All the resistance, all the reason to not do what it is you know would be good for you. When you finally do these things, like I finally sit down and do my taxes. Oh, I love to procrastinate on that job.
But you know what? It was nothing. It was just time, and there was no good reason to not do them, and there was a lot of good reasons to do them, and now I'm free. Ah, it was nothing. We're talking now about, for example, in a special relationship with your spouse, somebody you love, and you're having a little problem with them. You feel like defending your side, right? Tell them, if you just tell them, and they understood what you really think, they drop their argument. So says the ego.
Say, wait, are you saying that like it's truth?
But they're so busy telling their side, they can't hear you. So you should raise your voice, see? That's what the ego says. And once they hear what you're really trying to say, they'll say, of course you're right. No, it's not the way it works out. What we're talking about, example, okay, here, is that for you to drop your defenses in your conversation with your loved one is nothing. It feels like you're losing ground. You'll be a doormat. They'll walk all over you. You will be shown as wrong. They'll think you're agreeing with them because you're no longer correcting them. That's what the ego says. You can't let them say that. Don't let them finish their sentence. You know it's wrong. Jump on them. So the ego says. You can only know what I'm saying is true if you've ever actually tried this. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy to say, tell me more about how stupid I am. That sounds like crazy behavior. But it de-escalates the situation, see? It actually, you answer a call for love with love, with a statement like that, and the whole thing starts to ratchet down. Pretty soon they say, all right, here's how I actually feel. Why don't you tell me how you feel? That dimension will come. And it's like, wow, the swords are down, there's no more blood on the floor. But you can't know this until you've actually tried being defenseless or being patient or even just trying to be honest, actually, instead of trying to get the jab in. It's a little dishonest, but it's a good time to say it anyway. Things like that. This is special relationship grounds, and to give those up is actually giving up nothing. It's a huge lesson, but you would need a little encouragement to walk that treacherous path. There's so much to lose.
Oh, God. It makes sense when you say it and you're not mad. It makes total sense.
Nice.
When I'm mad.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
But it feels so good to think that that might work.
Totally.
Doesn't it? But Sharon, you make a great point. Yes, now, that's a really honest point, and it's so how the way things roll. So there's several workbook lessons. One of them is, I can give up the world I see. I can escape the world I see by giving up attack thoughts. Another one is, my grievances, my madness, hides. My madness hides the light of the world.
So my grievances are madness.
Yes. Anger.
That's easy to fix.
Anger, mad. Yeah, absolutely. And they block. They are blocks to the lovely light in you that would make everything else look light. You're shining darkness with your grievances, not shining light.
It's funny you say that because I had taken an anger management class just to take it because of that prodigal son I had.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, and it was really interesting. It showed me the battlefield of where I was at.
Uh-huh.
Because I was taking my prisoners and making sausages out of them.
Okay.
Bleed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the next little business while you bring the flowers.
No, that was like about
yeah. Yeah. He killed some of those grapes, maybe. Those are my flowers anyway.
Even sausages next
time. Now he knows how he got rid of the body. No, we know too much.
Everything in this room stays in this room.
Yes, yes. Feel free to speak your mind. Yes.
Well, you know how the ego gets you going.
Oh, you know, we don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, paragraph 9, who's up?
What?
Stephanie, Stephen. Paragraph 9. Is it paragraph 10?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Look at us fly. There's no paragraph 10. Wow!
The attraction of guilt!
Yes, we're changing the attraction of guilt. Okay, this is crazy. Yeah, let's rock this. So now...
Oh.
Now we are switching. Okay, look at the way these sections are laid out. This is a section 4 called The Obstacles of Peace on page 406. Then, the first obstacle, A, is the desire to get rid of peace. Now, among the desires to get rid of peace, what are they? Well, now we'll go to 4:10. Well, first one is the attraction of guilt. What can you buy if he's guilty?
Rightness.
Rightness. An apology. So who knows? Good stuff. Guilt is a coin of this world. It's bad if you've got it, but it's good if somebody else. You could put it on somebody else. It could be good. Yeah. Let's read this section. Okay, one paragraph each. This I section, the attraction of guilt.
The attraction of guilt produces fear of love, for love would never look on guilt at all. It is the nature of love to look upon only the truth, for there it sees itself, with which it would unite in holy union and completion. As love must look past fear, so must fear see love not. Love is attracted only to love. Overlooking guilt completely, it sees no fear. Being wholly without attack, it could not be afraid.
I think you skipped a sentence.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah,
go back up to sentence three.
As love must look past fear, so must fear see love not. For love contains the end of guilt, as surely as fear depends on it.
Woo!
Love is attracted only to love. Overlooking guilt completely, it sees no fear. Being wholly without attack, it could not be afraid. Fear is attracted to what love sees not, and each believes that what the other looks upon does not exist. Mm-hmm. Fear looks on guilt with just the same emotion that love looks on itself. And each has messengers which it sends forth, and which return to it with messages written in the language in which their going forth was asked.
Yes, beautiful.
Right.
And number 11.
Love's messengers are gently sent and return with messages of love and gentleness. The messengers of fear are harshly ordered to seek out guilt and cherish every scrap of evil and of sin that they can find, losing none of them on pain of death, and laying them respectfully before their Lord and Master.
Mm-hmm.
Perception cannot obey two masters, each asking for messages of different things in different languages. What fear would feed upon, love overlooks. What fear demands, love cannot even see. The fierce attraction that guilt holds for fear is wholly absent from love's gentle perception. What love would look upon is meaningless to fear, and quite invisible.
Misako.
Relationships in this world are the result of how the world is seen, and this depends on which emotion was called on to send its messengers to look upon it and return with word of what they saw. Fierce messengers are trained through terror, and they tremble when their master calls on them to serve him. For fear is merciless even to its friends. Its messengers still guilty away in hungry search of guilt, for they are kept cold and starving and made very vicious by their master, who allows them to feast only upon what they return to him.
Oh, that's going to be great. Right, one of us is a psychologist in here at least. Where do we dig into that? Okay, let's go.
No little shred of guilt escapes their hungry eyes, and their savage search for sin, they pounce on any living thing they see and carry it screaming to their master to be devoured.
That's actually sick,
isn't it?
This reminds me of Eckhart Tolle's definition of a pain body.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it feels like to
you
me.
Bet. Yeah, self-fulfilling prophecy. Yes. Number 13. Lucky 13. Carol.
Send not these savage messengers into the world to feast upon it and to prey upon reality, for they will bring you word of bones and skin and flesh. They have been taught to seek for the corruptible and to return with gorges filled with things decayed and rotted. to them, such things are beautiful because they seem to allay their savage pains of hunger. For they are frantic with the pain of fear and would avert the punishment of him who sends them forth by offering him what they hold dear.
God, sick and twisted. Mario.
The Holy Spirit has given you love messengers to send instead of those you trained through fear. They are as eager to return to you what they have, what they hold dear, as are the others. If you send them forth, they will see only the blameless and the beautiful, the gentle and the kind. They will be as careful to let no little act of charity, no tiny expression of forgiveness, no little breath of love escape their notice. And they will return with all the happy things they found to share them lovingly with you. Be not afraid of them. They offer you salvation. Theirs are the message of safety, for they see the world as kind.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
If you send forth only the messengers the Holy Spirit gives you, wanting no messages but theirs, you will see fear no more. The world will be transformed before your sight, cleansed of all guilt and softly brushed with beauty. The world contains no fear that you laid not upon it, and none you cannot ask love messengers to remove from it and see it still. The Holy Spirit has given you his messengers to send to your brother and return to you with what love sees. They have been given to replace the hungry dogs of fear you sent instead, and they go forth to signify the end of fear.
Love, too, would set a feast before you on a table covered with a spotless cloth, set in a quiet garden where no sound but singing and softly joyous whispering is ever heard. This is a feast that honors your holy relationship and at which everyone is welcomed as an honored guest. And in a holy instant, grace is said by everyone together as they join in gentleness before the table of communion. And I will join you there, as long ago I promised and promise still. For in your new relationship am I made welcome, and where I am made welcome, there I am.
I am made welcome in the state of grace, which means you have at last forgiven me. For I became the symbol of your sin, and so I had to die instead of you. To the ego, sin means death. And so atonement is achieved through murder. Salvation is looked upon as a way by which the Son of God was killed instead of you. Yet would I offer you my body, you whom I love, knowing its littleness? Or would I teach that bodies cannot keep us apart? Mine was of no greater value than yours. No better means for communication of salvation, but not its source. No one can die for anyone, and death does not atone for sin. But you can live to show it is not real. The body does appear to be the symbol of sin while you believe that it can get you what you want, while you believe that it can give you pleasure. You will also believe that it can bring you pain. To think you could be satisfied and happy with so little is to hurt yourself, and to limit the happiness that you would have calls upon pain to fill your meager store and make your life complete. This is completion as the ego sees it. For guilt creeps in where happiness has been removed and substitutes for it. Communion is another kind of completion which goes beyond guilt because it goes beyond the body. So once again, A Course in Miracles is going to bust this whole body frame that we hold so dear yet again. But let's turn back to page 410. We have a couple of minutes to just dig in a little bit and prepare ourselves our minds for the attraction of guilt, and how we use guilt in our relationships and in this world as a tool. It's like a coin that you would trade to get things. How handy is guilt? Look at page 317 in the text. And look at paragraph 2 and 3. This is called the needless sacrifice. And it's way back in chapter 15 as we're about to really hit hard on special relationship. It kind of digs in. You ready to go?
2?
Paragraph 2, yeah.
The egoless establishes relationships only to get something.
Page 317 in the text.
The needless sacrifice.
The needless sacrifice. Start with paragraph 2.
The ego establishes relationships only to get something. And it would keep the giver bound to itself through guilt. It is impossible for the ego to enter into any relationship without anger, for the ego believes that anger makes friends. This is not its statement, but it is its purpose. For the ego really believes that it can get and keep by making guilty. This is its one attraction, an attraction so weak that it would have no hold at all, except that no one recognizes it. For the ego always seems to attract through love. It has no attraction at all to anyone who perceives that it attracts through guilt.
I did say we're going to be busting the ego here.
Yeah.
Check out paragraph 3.
The sick attraction of guilt must be recognized for what it is. For having been made real to you, it is essential to look at it clearly, and by withdrawing your investment in it, to learn to let it go. No one would choose to let go what he believes has value. Yet the attraction of guilt has value to you only because you have not looked at what it is, and have judged it completely in the dark. As we bring it to light, your only question will be why it was you ever wanted it. You have nothing to lose by looking open-eyed, for ugliness such as this belongs not in your holy mind. The host of God can have no real investment here.
Ugliness such as this, like all of the resistance we were putting, all the ideas we had of why we wouldn't just choose right thinking or love or peace or get on our to-do list or be kind to ourselves, all that, those are uglinesses, and they do not belong in your holy mind.
Can you please repeat that?
All the resistant reasons you had for not choosing to be peaceful, to be loving, to actually do something good for yourself. We started the meeting with, what's your resistance? What are your reasons for not actually choosing healthy change? What are your reasons? Those are all ugliness. All of them were ugliness. Like, you know what? Screw it. That's an ugliness in your mind. When, as soon as you back up just a little bit and watch how you are shoveling the cookies in your face that you promised you would not, or taking the drug that you said, I'm never going to do this again, and yet here you go. This is ugliness that does not need to be in your life. It is in your life. We're not in denial about that. But looking at it busts it. Asking for help busts it. Rising out of it, even only for an instant, busts it and makes it weak. Staying in anger makes anger stronger. Stepping out of anger for a moment, go stand in front of a mirror and see how it is you're angry. Not why, I know you got all these great reasons why. Just go take a look at how you're angry, if that's your deal, by looking in the mirror. Or how is it you're eating the cookies? How is it you're doing the drug? Not why you're doing the drug. That's so deep, you're going to have to go get a psychologist and work through it for years. Let's just look at how and bust it right now.
How?
Yes. How is it you're so angry? You go stand in a mirror and it's going to be like this. Your teeth are showing. Your fists are clenched. Your shoulders are up. I'm so mad at that. Oh, that is how I'm angry. And you just drop it for, drop the how for a second. Come into the present moment for a second, and you will bust it.
And you see the illusion.
You see the illusion for what it is, which is nothing. The anger is actually nothing. Fear is actually nothing. Any kind of loss, by definition, even, is nothing. That's how you do it. Right? I mean, oh my God, bust this stuff! The sooner the better.
Wow. It sounds so easy to do, really, when you look at it when you're not in the middle of it. But when you're in the middle of some severe anger,
yes,
yeah.
You can look at it and go, "Yeah, that's me," and I'm happy to be there at this moment in my anger.
Yes,
it's really hard to let go of it. And
yes,
but willfully.
Yes, but even if you look at it a month later, it has an effect, and then the next time you might look at it a week later.
But don't you find by now? You're not, you know, even when you go there, it's nowhere near.
It's not the same.
It's not the same now as it was before this.
No. Yeah.
And just that's depends. The name of the game. I mean,
thank
that's
you.
It.
It depends on how deep I can get caught up into the ego around it. Yeah.
For sure.
No, Kim, you can never be as dark as you were before.
No, exactly. I can't.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
That's the gift in it.
Yeah.
Isn't it the gift? That's what Pam's pointing out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the proof of healing.
We still go there.
Yes.
I spun out on Christmas Eve, but it's like, you know, but it's not, it's like you, it's that whole thing. It's like you catch yourself quicker.
Quicker.
You know, it's not as bad.
It doesn't last as long.
You can think of, God, at least this, thank God this is all temporary, you know.
And sometimes you can actually get a little chuckle out of it.
Yep. And I was just thinking as you were talking, like that little, you don't need to know how.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to even get it.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to be open to it.
Yep.
I love that.
That's so empowering.
That's always the most comforting piece.
Right.
Like, I don't need to necessarily get what Andrew's saying fully. I just need to be open to it. I love that.
Yes, and it breaks the addiction.
Yeah.
That fear is real, that I'm a victim, that there is, that I can't do it, there's no way. That's an addiction, these thoughts. These are ugly things. You do not belong in a holy mind.
Right.
You have a holy mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, oh, yeah.
So when you get angry with
Andrew.
Well,
so you get angry.
No, I'm just saying, like, when we don't catch it, does it come from a place of righteousness? I'm just sitting here going,
I don't know. I never know. It's some ego thing going on usually, but you know what I have found, and you're right, I can never go into the anger that I used to go into. It's just not in me anymore.
That's right.
That's good.
Yep.
I recognize that
it's huge,
that I'm going through something, and what I don't do anymore is I don't give it the power that I used to give it before, because I know I'm going to come out of it and there's something, and I just try not to let it be all that anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
the
right.
The rabbit hole is just a...
Yeah, it's just like, okay, I'm angry.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And your soul rises.
Let it go, you know.
Yeah. Its value
You're
is down.
Observing it more.
I observe it more and I'll go through it. But I still, it doesn't feel good. Still
doesn't feel good.
But
still there.
But
still angry.
Yeah.
But not the same.
Right.
And not harvested like it used to be.
Right.
It does not have the duration it used to have. It's just not as powerful. This is success.
Yeah.
This
really
is the path
up. What you said about don't ask the why of it, just ask the how of it.
Yes.
As soon as you get into your head, your ego is going to take over.
It's going to win. Yeah. What's that called?
Well, you know, I've been leading a women's support group for the past 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And inside of those 2 years, when I make somebody wrong, it never works. And so I had to learn quickly how to get off it, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
So I've had more practice, and I'm really blessed that I have put myself in that situation for kind of a speedy growth process.
Yes.
And so 2 weeks ago, what I shared earlier about this illusion or seeming in my head that I have the power to withhold the love that this person needs. And so at a Christmas party, I looked at her and I noticed, cringe, you know, the resistance, and I thought, okay, I think it's time. And so again, because I don't need words now, like, you know, asking for a miracle, whatever, I just need to recognize that, okay, it's time for whatever, it's time to make, you know, contact. So I go over there, I sit down, but the key for me, it's always being in that moment.
Yes.
Because, so what that means is that I am looking and listening and being with this person.
Yes.
Okay? And so I don't have time to have this inner dialogue.
No.
Well, how am I doing? You know, how am I receiving this person? Because being present and this thing, it's like fear and love. It can't live in my head.
Yes.
So, but the magic, I know I'm not supposed to use that word in Course in Miracles, but in the conventional term, the blessing, the magic about this time is it happened so fast that that it felt like I never lost the connection with this woman. The love that I felt before this incident, which I know I made up in my mind about what she did and what she didn't do. So the love returned before the story that I concocted, you know. But it was just such a lovely practice, and I'm really grateful for the learning of these lessons.
Your teacher has served you, that woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Yes, and your thoughts were very ugly. They have now given you a gift and provided the call and answer of love. The ugly thoughts have provided the call and the answer to love.
Well, I did stop there. So I putting words into what I did now was, okay, I recognized I needed a miracle, and when I became present, that allowed the Holy Spirit to come out of me, and I didn't do anything but just be present.
Yes, you did nothing.
No, absolutely nothing.
It was not easy to do nothing when there's all this opportunity to either run or engage on the old.
You that did was nothing. Hard.
That's
too.
Hard.
Oh my God, that resistance.
Yes, you need to do nothing. You need to get started on that in most of these situations. Let's have a circle.
It's funny you brought that up, because every time I hit it, this turns on.
Take a deep breath. And acknowledge that we have all gathered here tonight, and it's been no mistake. We are here to bust our egos. Done with it. You just simply choose to let go of whatever contraction is meeting you in your daily life. Just let it go. Just for an instant. You can pick it up in a minute. Let it go.
What's
to me? Misery will be returned.
Yes. Misery gladly refunded. If peace doesn't work out, to actually be peaceful and everything you really want it. To remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence in any minute is really an undoing. Let go of the thought. Let go of the resistance. Let go of the block. And then in your ear, in your reality, will come this still quiet voice that simply says, come to peace now. Join me in peace, it says. Jesus is saying, I will join you there. The paragraphs we just read. You go silent, I'll be there waiting. Check it, you won't be alone. You can borrow my strength, he says, in moments like that. And this is a way we would learn to let go of our old ways of thinking with confidence. There is another way. There is a better way. These fears, these doubts, this smallness are made up. They're made up and they're held up by just continuing to chase them with your thoughts. Stop that. And receive this beautiful love that flows into that open hand. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Amen.
It's all just related.